for members only. Golf Smarter number 330, published on April 24, 2012.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Solid Contact, Part 2, with Jim Hardy.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter for members only, Jim.
Thank you, Fred. Good to be here with you again.
Thank you. We were just talking about your work with Peter Jacobson, and you kind of led me into, is he that much fun to work? Do you get anything done, or is he just, you're just laughing nonstop?
Peter Jacobson is my very dear best friend, and we have been best friends now for, this is our 30th year. And
wow.
I can honestly tell you that I've been with Peter in every situation. I've been with him raising his kids, and he's been with me raising mine. I mean, no two guys could be closer. And I have never seen Peter have a bad occasion with another human being. If Peter were a phony, I promise you, somewhere in 30 years I'd have seen it. Peter Jacobson genuinely loves people. Peter Jacobson is a genuine good guy. He's even funnier when you get to know him than he is otherwise. But Peter is also one of the most compassionate, caring people that has ever lived. I couldn't say enough good things about Peter.
That's beautiful.
He is the genuine deal.
That's amazing. Phenomenal. What a nice thing to say about a friend.
He is wonderful.
When you, with all these great players that you've worked with all these great players that you've helped, what an honorable position that is. I mean, being a teacher at any level is so honorable, and for you to be able to have high-profile students and for you to want to be kept in the background, that's really, I admire you so much for doing that. How often does the conversation turn to ball flight with these guys? I mean, is it just contact, swing, putting, things like that? But when does the, because to me this seems so radical, the idea of ball flight.
Well, I tell them, every time we talk on the telephone, all the players, we talk a lot. Where are you hitting it? Where are your misses? Where is the divot pointed? What kind of divot are you making? Tell me about this club. Tell me about that club. Tell me about that shot. Because I know what's wrong with their swing by them telling me there. In other words, when I have a new student, and I'll say, okay, where are you hitting the driver when you miss it? Everywhere. No, you're not missing it everywhere. You know, if you are, you're pushing it and hooking it or pulling it and slicing it. Which combination are you? Because you can't pull and you don't pull and push and you don't hook and slice, you see.
Yeah.
And where's the ball? Ball's left. Well, where's the divot? Well, I don't know. Well, you better start looking. You know, because that's the important stuff. And I tell him, don't ever send me a video without telling me where your misses with this golf club are going, and don't send me a video without drawing some lines on it. And they all know the lines I want drawn on there, because you have to have a reference point, you see. And the reference point has to be, what kind of shots is your swing producing right now, misses, and you have to have a reference point when you're looking at a golf swing. And the most important reference point is the flight of the ball, because that's the end result of the product. If the swing is the product, the end result is the flight. I mean, if the swing is what we're looking at, the product, the end result is the flight of the golf ball. And that tells me everything I need to know about the golf swing. How you read the flight of the ball and how you apply the flight of the ball and the impact to understanding your golf swing is the secret to golf. It's the key to golf.
Um, That is so interesting. I have noticed, and I'm just going to start talking about me now, Coach, that I consistently hit a fade.
Okay.
And a little bit left to right. I'm right-handed. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't know how to hit a draw if my life depended. I just cannot figure out how to do it, nor have I worked on it. But you're saying I live with it, right? And I know that it's like, okay, there's my target. I'm very diligent about target golf, about saying this is where I want to get it. This is, I'm aiming, I'm looking, I'm focused right on that spot. So knowing that, I'm just going to look a little bit, I'm going to aim a little bit left on my alignment so that the ball is going to end up in that spot. And then occasionally, sometimes the ball will go straight, and it's like, "Oops, I missed." But what the sense that I get is you're saying, "Live with it, embrace it, and work with it."
Well, I'm going to name you some golfers that you fall into their category.
Okay.
Craig Stadler.
Can I play with him?
Bruce Litsky, Jack Nicklaus, Lee Trevino.
I feel better about my game already.
Pretty good players right there. If Bruce Litsky faced a shot that required a hook, he played a cut. Okay?
Now, to explain the difference, please.
He played a fade. He played a slice.
Okay.
He did not hook it. Mm-hmm. In other words, if these guys are smart enough to know, Jack Nicklaus played a cut. He didn't play hooks. If when I said Bruce Litsky, if the shot to the pin required a hook, we're going to hook that one in there. He didn't do it. He still played the slice. Mm-hmm. He didn't. He either he played a high risky cut when it was going to require a hook, or he didn't go for that pin. There are certain pins that you don't go for. You see. A back left pin was a hard shot for Jack Nicklaus. A front right pin was a giveaway for Jack Nicklaus and was almost impossible for Arnold Palmer. They understood that. They understood. I remember the first time I ever played with Billy Casper, I played as good as I could play. We were playing Byron Nelson in the third round. I was paired with him, and I played as good as I could, hit the ball as good as I could play, didn't putt good, didn't putt bad, and I shot 71. Billy Casper played awful. Didn't hole a whole bunch of putts, putted about like I did, and shot 68. I'm sitting down at lunch afterwards with him. I said, "Do you mind if I ask you some questions?" He said, "Sure." I said, "Help me. I played, hit the ball about as good as I could hit it, came up with 71. I know you weren't happy with the way you hit the ball today, and it's not like you putted like a madman, and you shot 68. Where am I going wrong?" And he said, "You don't concentrate on solely hitting the ball the right distance with your iron shots." He said, "You're too busy flagging the ball at the pin every time because you can do that." And he said, "When you miss hit a little bit," he said, and he named off a few that I had, 30-foot downhill putt that was impossible to two putt, or buried it underneath the lip of a bunker twice. And he said, "If you notice," he said, "a 15-footer right or left of the hole is the same length putt as a 15-footer short or past the hole. You don't always have to aim at the hole. But what you always have to understand is the part of the green or the position on the green you're trying to put the ball into, how far to hit it to there." And I went back over, we went back over Billy's round, and Billy never took a risk. Never. Never. If he knew which pins his ball flight could shoot at and which pins it couldn't. And when he had a pin like a back left pin, a low hook's going to skip back there, he knocked it stiff. If he had a right front pin, he would just put the ball about 15 feet left of the pin and just passed it. And he knew it. He knew he could play golf that way. And all of a sudden, it opened my eyes to the fact that all Billy Casper was doing was hitting a predictable shot. Even though it wasn't a shot that would be the ultimate shot to shoot at that pin. He knew he could put the ball out there 12 feet left of the pin, and he knew he had a pretty good chance of holding that 12-footer, and for him, for his ball flight, wasn't going to take a risk. And that was a big... that was a big eye-opener for me.
Sure.
And so
sure.
For you, if you can play a cut every time, first of all, you should always be playing two shots. A straight ball and a hook, a straight ball and a cut. And never let the straight ball hurt you. You see, let's say that you know you can cut it every time. And you want to put it down the left side of the fairway. That's fine. Just aim a little left of the fairway. But if all of a sudden I said, there's water left the fairway, and you're playing the 18th hole at Doral, well, don't aim the ball over the water unless you're absolutely 100% sure it's going to cut, which Bruce Litsky and Craig Sadler were. But most of the time, I would say, well, aim down the left side of the fairway and play a cut. You see the difference. Because aiming down the left side of the fairway, playing a cut, if it doesn't cut, if it's a straight ball, you're still in play. If you cut it, you're still in play. It's when you go over the water with a cut and you don't cut it, you're not okay. And that's just a misplayed strategy shot.
Thank you. I once was doing an interview with somebody. I honestly don't remember who it was, but they said that Tiger Woods has no ego on the course. And I'm like, what? He said he has no ego. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And we'd already been through all of Tiger's problems. And it's like, what do you mean he has egos? Tiger will never take a shot on the course that he hasn't practiced 1,000 times.
I will say that there's some truth to that, particularly into the green. But Tiger hits a lot of terrible drives.
Yeah.
Terrible drives.
Yeah.
And so he's trying to do something with that driver that he shouldn't be trying to do. So I would say that into the green, I would very much agree with that.
Yeah, he's very creative off a bad drive, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. Let's get into your book, please. And I'm sorry I've dragged this out because I'm having so much fun. So in Solid Contact, you have a system of plus and minus.
That's right.
To help you correct where, well, you know, life is a balance. No matter what you're doing, you're always trying, every single day when you wake up, you're just trying to find a balance.
Sure.
You know, of... this is good today. It was bad yesterday. This is bad today, and who knows what's going to be next week. You're always trying to find just to get you through the end of the day. And you're saying that almost that golf is the same thing. There's things that you do that if you can balance it out so that you can get to an equilibrium here just by this is a plus, this is a minus, not an A, B, C, or D, or a 90% and versus a 30%, just simply plus versus minus.
That's right. You see, everything in golf is a binary code, an on or an off, a yin or a yang, a plus or a minus, a black or a white. Everything is, and we make it too complicated by thinking that golf is a 10,000 different pieces all some way glued together. And the ball flight's a mystery, and the impact's a mystery, and our swing's a mystery. We've got timing, tempo, rhythm, and balance. We've got a strong grip, a weak grip. You bend over, you stand up, you put the ball forward, you put the ball back. You make a long backswing, a short backswing, you take it straight back, you take it to the inside, you cock your wrist, you're across the line, you're laid off. I could go on for hours, but that's the way people look at golf. They look at golf as though we've got all the colors of the rainbow going on, plus all the sounds of an orchestra going on, and it's just too complicated. Golf is either on or off. It's a plus or a minus. It's a yin or a yang. Everything in golf is either a plus or a minus. Everything you do. There isn't a move you can make in a golf swing that's not either a plus or a minus. There isn't a ball flight miss, a terrible shot that has ever been hit, that isn't the result of a golf swing that has gotten either overly plus or overly minus. Think of a salad dressing, if you will. We've got oil and vinegar. The salad dressing is either just fine, or it's too oily, or it's too vinegary. That's all. We're going to season our food. Either it's just fine, or it's got too much salt or too much pepper. And that's really what golf swings are. Golf swings are just fine. I call that neutral. I love your word, equilibrium. Golf swings are just fine when they're hitting solid, playable shots that are predictable. It's when our golf swing gets out of whack. When you're not hitting it solid, you're not hitting a predictable shot, or you're not doing it repetitively. That's when we've got a problem. And how do you know what to do? Well, when I said everything in a golf swing is a plus or a minus, what we're ultimately trying to do with the golf club is get it to swing somewhat along the ground, somewhat in the right direction, into the back of the ball. Now, when I use the word somewhat, a driver is a sweeping club that either hits level or slightly upward. A wedge is a very short club, or a 9-iron. We're standing very close to the ball, and it's a club we want to hit more down, under, and up on. So one swing with our shortest clubs is more down, under, and up, which is more of a V-shaped kind of motion. And the driver, which is a long club and it sits a long way from us, is more of a sweeping club. And instead of a V kind of bottom, it has like an upside-down C, a much longer, if you will, time it's along the ground swinging. So in either case, everything about impact can be viewed like an airplane trying to land. If an airplane comes in on too steep of an angle, it's coming straight down, I promise you there's a lot of noise in that cockpit because there is some kind of computer going, pull up, pull up, pull up, pull up, you're in a dive, you're blah, blah, blah. You know.
You can imagine the screams in the back of the plane, too.
That's right. That's right. We've got to level this thing off. How many times, conversely, have you been in an airplane when there's rough weather or something and you're circling the field? And finally you turn around to the person next to you and you say, is this thing ever going to get down? I've got another plane to catch. In other words, that airplane has no angle to land the airplane at all. It doesn't intend to. It's flying level to the ground. It doesn't have an angle. And golf, in a geometry standpoint, is like that. The club, too often, is coming in at the wrong angle, which in turn also has to do with its creating the wrong kind of bottom to land this thing. A big airplane like a driver, a big 747, needs to have a really long runway, and it needs to land on a really shallow angle, about 2-degree landing path. While a airplane that's kind of like what we see, crop dusters, trick airplanes, they can come in on a real steep angle, and they only need a very short runway, if you follow me.
Oh, no, you've given
and that's
a
for golf clubs. Yeah. A driver... Huh?
I'm saying that you've given a very good visual on how to do this, and the way I'm seeing it is that with the plus-minus system, that's your assignment, and your grade is your ball flight. So how do we get that grade that we want, that we're searching for, not an A or B or a C, but consistently I want the same type of ball flight, correct? And,
right.
And using your plus-minus system can bring you to that point. So what I want to know is what are the elements that we're looking at, which is a plus, which is a minus? How do we balance those out? How do we get to that grade that we're looking
for? Well, thanks for bringing me back.
No, that's okay. I was enjoying the flight.
It is.
I was going to ask you if you can get me
a Coke. Half of all ball flight misses are caused by a golf swing that have too many pluses in them. Because you've got too much coming down on too steep an angle with too short a runway. Now, those ball flight misses would be slices, pulls, chops, chunks, steep tops, low traps. There's a number of those ball flight misses that all are a result of being 2+. The other ball flight misses, which would be shallow tops, pushes, hooks, fats, thins, things like that, those are all misses because you're 2-, you're circling the field here, you're hitting straight up on the golf ball. So, first of all, your misses are going to tell you which direction your swing DNA has all of a sudden found itself in. Is the salad dressing got too much vinegar in it or too much oil? Now, once you've understood that from a ball flight standpoint, boy, I'm pulling and slicing and chopping and chunking, okay? You see all those, then all of a sudden you realize my impact, my golf swing is producing a plus. There's too many pluses in there. I need to neutralize this. I need to bring the salad dressing back under control. Well, there are a lot of things you can do in a golf swing that will start to offset all these pluses. For instance, some of the things that will do that is the more you turn in the backswing, the more that's letting the swing move towards minus. The flatter you swing a golf club, the more that's moving the swing towards minus. The weaker your grip or the more open your club face is, the more that's moving it towards minus. The more your weight transfers to the right leg, the more you set up with your weight on the right leg. The more you set up with a handle in a neutral place, even or slightly behind the golf ball, the more the club face would set pointed to the shaft to the left at the top would be a minus. Swinging down more inside out would be a minus. Sliding your hips would help be a minus. It would help neutralize those pluses.
Yeah, big minus.
Retarding your shoulder turn somewhat in the downswing, staying behind the ball more. Any of those things, you see, I could keep naming them, by the way, and I do name them in the book.
Yeah, and you named a lot, but I just want to ask you for a definition on one of the ones that you just said. I was following you really well. When you say a flat, too flat.
Oh, the flatter, see, everything is relative. It's like adding, our oil or our vinegar.
Right.
The more vinegar you add, let's say that I've got it too oily and I've got to add vinegar. The more you add, so if I said the more you turn, if I turn a little bit more, I'm making it a little bit shallower. If I turn a whole bunch, I'm making it a whole lot shallower, or more of a minus. Do you understand?
Well, what I understand that I'm getting very hungry. And then I know what I'm having. I know what I'm having for lunch. But describe what you mean by flat. Not you know. It's like I recognize what flat is?
A golf club. A golf club that swings vertical to the ground is very upright.
Okay.
A golf swing that swings more horizontal to the ground would be flatter.
Right. So as I'm looking at your website at theplaintruth.com, and there's an image that passes by, and it's two positions. Two people taking swings. One, I would assume, is a one-plane swing, and the other one is a two-plane swing.
Right.
Right? So is the one-plane swing, is that the flatter?
Yes, that would be swinging flatter. Imagine
and
Matt
that's a
Kuchar.
Minus? And that's a minus?
That would be a minus. That'd be more circling the field. You follow me?
Okay, I'm with you now. Now
there you go.
Okay, thank you. And again, I'm happy.
And then if I swung more upright, that would be for somebody whose ball flights are very, very minus, and if he swings more upright, he's starting to make his golf swing more plus. Do you follow me?
Yeah, and I think that I'm on the upright part. I think, and I've forced myself to try to bring a little flatter, and it's just uncomfortable, and it takes too much thinking. That's not where I naturally go.
Then you would want to do a different one. You would want to say, I want to turn more in the backswing. For instance, Jack, let's say your fade got too much. And that would be showing a plus ball flight.
That's not so hypothetical, Jim. That's not hypothetical at all.
And let's say you say, I want to quit being so plus. Well, you'd go to the charts, which would be the opposite charts. How do I move towards minus? How do I neutralize this? You could take one of Jack Nicklaus's keys. You could. In other words, he said, turn more in the backswing and turn your hips more. Nicklaus used to say all the time, I don't know where these people came up with not turning your hips a lot in the backswing. I turn them as far as I can. Well, if he didn't, as upright as his golf swing was, he'd chop. He'd probably slice. So he turned his hips a huge amount to all of a sudden get more minus in his golf swing, to get more vinegar in this dressing that's too oily, you see. He would do that. And that's one thing you could do. If you didn't like to flatten your swing to get rid of all the fade, that's fine.
Thank you.
Just turn more in your backswing. Okay. Or stand a little bit more upright at address.
Really?
That will let you turn more.
Okay. Thank you.
You see?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Those things are fun. To feel, when I say fun, is there isn't one path you have to go down. If someone says, well, you need to flatten your golf swing, and you go, that doesn't feel right to me.
Right.
Well, good. That's not right to you. You're what I call a two-planer. You would need to feel like you turn more in your hips and your shoulders in the backswing. Maybe even stand a little bit more upright, which will make you easier to turn, you see.
So as I become an older adult, as we all are doing, and I have physical limitations that don't allow me to make those sort of turns, there are still pluses and minuses to help me compensate.
Absolutely, but I would give you one of Harvey Panik's. He was a teacher of mine.
Wow.
Is for two planers who were getting older, Harvey just said, please pick up your left heel.
Really?
Come on. That lets you turn more.
Wow.
And all of a sudden everybody said, well, Ben Hogan didn't pick up his left heel, therefore it's not a fundamental of golf. Well, it's sure a fundamental of golf for Tom Watson. He still picks it up.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
It's like, and everyone, quiet down your lower body. Quiet down your lower body. Don't. No?
You need the other, you see. And that's why I was saying is all you would need to try out. And that's what I say in this book. In other words, if your golf swing is 2+, and you know it is because the ball flight's telling you, here's 20 things you can try, and you're going to find one of them that works better for you than the others. And that's the one you should incorporate. You see, it's not, you shouldn't incorporate the one that somebody that doesn't have your problem is incorporating for openers. But there is no rule that says you have to incorporate any of them. The one that you incorporate is the one that feels the best and gets the best results for you.
I think I'm getting the essence of what we're talking about here, and please correct me if I'm wrong. We're not looking for a specific ball flight. We're looking for a consistent ball flight.
We're looking for a playable one. In other words, your fade is your natural ball flight.
Yep.
That's a good one.
Thank you.
It's not good when all of a sudden you sky the ball with a driver, you get too choppy and chunky with an iron, or you slice. Now that, all of a sudden, that fade is now no good. Mm-hmm. Another time a fade can be no good is if you start hitting too much in the heel, you see. Mm-hmm. So it depends upon what happens with your fade. Which ball flight, when you're not hitting your fade, is your miss? And that will always tell you what your impact is, plus or minus, and it will tell you how to get back to our good salad dressing. In other words, I think a fade's a great ball flight. You know what? I think a draw is a great ball flight. I'll tell you two ball flights I don't think are good. a whooping slice and a diving hook. Those aren't good, you see.
Not good.
No. So if your ball flight from a fade turns into a big slice or stops being solid, you see, that's when you would need to say, what's happened to my golf swing? Mm-hmm. It's this simple. Your golf swing has either gotten 2+ or 2-.
So we all have this natural golf swing inside of us. We all have this thing that we're going to do no matter what, and it's just a matter of refining that to...
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Wow.
The cruelest word we could give to some golfers is call them a hacker. That's because they're chopping too much on the ball. They need to start throwing tons of vinegar in this thing. They need to start getting shallow things in there until all of a sudden they quit doing it. It's really that easy, and that's what golfers do that learn how to play.
So do you prefer balsamic, red wine, rice vinegar? No, that's not the question.
I do like the slight sweetness of balsamic.
Okay, but that's not where I was going. No, our instructors today, and there are a plethora of instructors out there, from any person who ever thought that they had a good game and they don't want to do their day job anymore, to a kid who just loves golf growing up thinking, oh, I can be a teacher. Are they collectively, not individually, are they doing us a disservice today by trying to mold our swings into what we do not do naturally?
They are doing a wild disservice.
Whoa.
One of the things that my mission is life is helping instructors. I have an instructor certification course. They can become a level 1, which is kind of the entry level. They can become a level 2. They can become a level 3, which is the top instructors in the world. We have instructors that are certified in 14 countries. All over Europe, China, Philippines, Australia, South America, Scandinavia, UK, and America. We have hundreds of certified instructors. And instructors can certainly come to our website and look at our instructor certification seminars and come and learn to be better. But the real problem is we have to open our minds to the golfers in front of us and quit trying to teach a one path fits all. The best compliment I ever got was years ago. I used to teach several LPGA players, and one of them in particular, his name was Betty Burfine. And Betty had won the LPGA championship and a lot of tournaments and was just a sweetheart and a wonderful player. But knew as she was phasing out of being a player, she wanted to teach. And so she used to come and watch me teach. And after about the fifth time she watched me teach, she said, I'm not getting any better at all at understanding what you do. I said, what do you mean, Betty? And she said, I see these golfers come take a lesson from you, and they come and they're hitting the ball terrible, and quite frankly, they don't have a very good swing. And they leave, and I don't see much difference in their golf swing, but they hit the ball wonderful. And she said, I don't know what the heck you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was the whole crux of the matter. And here's our problem in golf. How many people have gone up to Jim Furyk and said, Jim, could you give me the name and number of your teacher? Because I sure like your golf swing.
Huh? No, I think they would say, Jim, would you teach me how to do what you do?
Sure.
Yeah.
But here's the tragedy. Jim Furyk, for a 10-year period of time, used to lead the all-around stats on the PGA Tour, which meant that Jim Furyk was the best hitter in golf.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we're out there trying to copy Ernie Els's swing, who virtually has disappeared from the top levels of the golf scene.
Why?
Because his swing is pretty, and Jim Furyk's isn't.
But Jim Furyk is more consistent?
I just said he led for 10 years every year the all-around ball-hitting statistics.
So what's wrong with Ernie these days?
Well, Ernie's swing is no longer reliable.
Because?
he's got too many minuses in his swing by a bunch.
Wow.
It still is pretty. It is still pretty.
Yeah.
Ernie hits a ton of fat, thin, pushes, and hooks. Every one of those is a minus-minus ball flight. You see,
how many swings do you need
pretty.
To see? Yeah, it's gorgeous. It's because it's so smooth, it's so rhythmic. It looks effortless. There's no question.
Yeah.
It looks effortless. Where we all know about Furyk, even those who don't follow know about Furyk. How many swings does it take for you to see?
One.
And you know where to go.
I know where his misses are going to be. I know what his good shots are going to be, his good clubs are going to be, what his bad clubs are going to be. I know the whole thing. I know his history. I can put my arm around him and say, you can't hit this ball with this club into this situation, and this is why.
Wow. So. For years, you're going to ruin some of my jokes, but I mean, it's like, you know, I say to people all the time, it's like, yeah, you had a great golf shot. You just, once the ball leaves the club face, it's totally out of your control. But what you're saying is that's where the control begins, is once that ball gets in the air and you can see where it's going, you can learn so much from that.
That tells me everything about his golf swing.
Wow.
That is right. That is tells me what's happening in his golf swing. And, if that's where we're blinded in golf instruction right now. It's almost as though we're giving lessons to golfers indoors into a net. And
you've just put the Golf Channel out of business, right?
Is that
because they're hitting balls into a net and they're telling you all these things and they don't talk about the people's ball flight.
But can you imagine how many bells and whistles would go off if we hooked up Lee Trevino or Jim Furyk or really Jack Nicklaus or Arnold Palmer or Bubba Watson, for guy's sakes. If we hooked them up to Ernie Els's model and we had a product on that was going to give all the readings of us, well, sirens would start going off a foot into the backswing. You see, and they would continue to have different bells and whistles screaming at us, you're wrong, 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 wrong. Except if I built one that had a club face, a swing path, an angle of hit and the width to the bottom of the swing on it, and it only registered what happened at impact, that's the machine we're trying to build. You see, we're trying to build the machine that will bring the club back to square, delivered in a good direction on a nice angle, and do that repetitively. That's what we're trying to build, not all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And right now, whenever you see a golfer who is failing on the PGA Tour, they're not failing because their swing's not pretty or what have you. They're swinging because the correct bells and whistles didn't go off relative to bringing the club back into the back of the ball.
Jim, this is
awesome.
Yes, sir. This is awesome. It's almost too simple for golf. Golf needs to be complicated or it will never succeed. I mean, it's a multi-billion-dollar business because it's too complicated.
Well, we've made it that, haven't we?
Well, yeah, but isn't that why more people are leaving the game than starting? Because it's too hard?
Sure.
I mean, forget about that it takes too long and it costs too much. It's too hard, and we continue to make it harder.
And they don't want the time and effort investment to learn how to play. They see they take a series of five lessons, and they're as bad or worse than they were after the fifth lesson than they were when they started.
Yikes.
You see, and it's so complicated to them, especially women who are not, haven't grown up playing a lot of bat and ball games. you know, and all of a sudden they just can't hit it. And they go, well, tennis is easier than this. At least I can hit the tennis ball because we've got it so corruptibly complicated.
Is that because the ball's not moving and we have to think about it? It's just sitting there and we're staring at it and thinking about it and trying to outwit it?
If I told people how, if I tell people how simple this game is, when they come to me or come to any of our instructors, they are amazed. They are amazed. Golf is a circular game played with the ball on the ground.
What do you mean by circular?
Baseball, any side-on game where you're standing to the side of your target line, you see, is a circular game. Any game where you're standing on your target line, usually facing your target, is a straight line game. You see, we stand and face a dartboard, shuffleboard, underhand pitching, overhand pitching, playing pool, anything where you're on your target line facing your target. The motion is straight back, straight through. Doesn't make any difference whether you're down here bowling or up overhand throwing darts. You're going pretty much straight back, straight through.
And you're looking at your target, not necessarily.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Now, let's go. Now we're to the side of our target line and to the side of the line of the object. That's hockey. That's polo. That's golf. That's throwing the discus. It's baseball. It's cricket. It's soccer style kicking. It's roundhouse punching, you see. All those games. Can you imagine throwing a discus in a straight line? Wouldn't go. Hmm. A javelin is thrown in a straight line, you see.
Frisbee.
Frisbee throwing. All side-on games are side-on. Baseball. The difference between a forehand and a backhand shot in tennis and baseball and golf is simply the ball is either on the ground or it's waist-high or chest-high. A ball that you would pick up in a forehand or a backhand shot in tennis, let's take a forehand shot in tennis. If you picked it up exactly at the ground, you made a golf swing.
Right.
Hockey, why do you think so many, almost 100% of all Canadian club PGA golf professionals are former hockey players? This is the same game. It's the same game. You skate into your lead foot, you put the stick behind you, and you slap it in a circular motion. Like hockey is golf.
Yeah.
Show me anybody who's played hockey, I'll let them grab a golf club like a hockey stick, split-handed, for their first few swings and say, would you please hit a slap shot? They never end up off the right foot with a stick stuck up in the air or something. Forehand shot in tennis. You step into your lead foot and you hit it from a. You put the tennis racket behind you to your side and hit it, you see.
I'm thinking lacrosse now, but you can go either way with that
one. I can go overhand. That's right.
Yeah, you can go either way with that one. So that's right. So what is our target in golf? The ball or the spot out that we're aiming to for the ball to land?
You have now asked one of the critical questions. Ben Hogan showed something in his book, Five Lessons, Modern Fundamentals in Golf, that kills golfers. People talk about it on television, announcers, that kills golfers. We are not swinging at the target. You are swinging in a circle around you, you see. You're only square to the target line for three ten-thousandths of a second. Wow. Mm. In fact, the more you try and swing down your target line, the more you are going to fail because you're not in an online game. You're in a side-on game. You swing around. The golf swing best put is inside to inside. Now, if you can imagine a baseball swing, when the batter is waiting for the pitch, but then it comes down and around you in a circular manner. Do you follow me?
Mm-hmm.
Now, just tip that plane of that circle that down towards the ball. If the pitcher were to roll the ball on the ground and we had to hit it, they'd make a golf swing. you are swinging at an object on the ground while swinging in a circle. That's all you're doing.
So you're swinging through that object. It's not that's not the target.
That's right. You're swinging around through the object. That's right. Exactly right. Yeah. The only thing that should be swinging at the target is the ball. You're swinging in a circle. Now, the circle either hits the ball too much while the circle is swinging downward and outward to the right, or upward and leftward to the left. Do you follow me?
Yep.
Yeah, that's all. That's all. And that's just a correction. A plus or minus correction.
There you go.
Right
like
there.
That.
But if I get, I teach all of our certified instructors how to do junior clinics and beginning clinics for women, particularly. As I just say, get them all to stand straight up in the air, hold the golf club out, chest to rib cage high, and swing the club around their rib cage and around their chest, back and forth, around them. Back in the backswing, around in the follow-through. And then I said, it's okay if you even have some pipes out there with a ball on top of a pipe with a baseball bat, and they're hitting them, until they can understand the concept of a circular game. Hit them with tennis rackets is fine. They don't have to use golf clubs. Just as long as they understand the concept of a circular game. You can have them throw frisbees. You can have them throw a discus. You can have them hit tennis balls. You can have them with a hockey stick. Anything that will get them to understand it's a circular game. Then tell them it's a circular game off the ground. Now, there's two ways to solve that while swinging in a circle. Either one, keep swinging in a circle and just bend over a bunch until the circle is oriented towards the ground. I call that a one-plane swing. The other one is don't bend over. Just lift your arms up and down while you're swinging in a circular game. That's a two-plane swing. That's our only two options, by the way. In other words, if you had a baseball player and he had to hit a pitch that was rolling on the ground, he either keeps swinging the bat around his rib cage and just simply bends his rib cage over until it is facing the ball. That would be Lee Trevino. That's Anthony Kim. That's Roy McIlroy. You see, they still swing around them, just bend over. Or they would stand straight up, and instead of swinging the baseball bat around them, they'd start lifting the club up in the air and down to the ground and up in the air with their arms while swinging in a circle. And that'd be Tom Watson.
Would a baseball pitcher be better off throwing sidearm than overhand? Because of more motion, the circular motion?
You do.
I'm going in a different direction here, sorry. I shouldn't go there.
You do have both sidearm and submarine pitchers that have all been in the major leagues.
Yeah.
You see. The problem with a sidearm pitcher or a submarine pitcher is they're only effective, if you will, against the batter that's standing on the same side their sidearm. If they're right-arm sidearm, they're hell for a right-handed hitter. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course, because a right-handed pitcher and a left-handed hitter, the left-handed hitter gets to see the ball longer than the right-handed hitter.
Yeah. Well, you see that. So you've really got overhand has a chance to throw the curves and the sliders. Sidearm's only going to get out half, you know, one, he's limited, and they're usually more relief pitchers. Bring him in for the right-handed batter or the left-handed batter, depending on what he is, and then you have to take him out for the next batter.
Okay, yeah. Sorry to go that direction.
But let me get back. You got the idea there.
Yeah.
You got the idea. One is a side-on pitcher. The other one's a straight-line pitcher.
Right. So I try to avoid asking two-part questions, but I'm going to do it this time, and it'll be obvious why I do it. So is there a target, and what is the target?
The target of the golf swing, if you will, is around you, is almost behind you at address. You are trying to swing the club as hard as you can through the ball around behind you. Now, that's the target of the swing. The target of the club, while the swing is doing that, is the ball. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's the ball. In other words, I can see someone swing in a practice swing. I cannot see the effectiveness of the swing without hitting a ball. So the club head's target is the ball. The swing's target doesn't end at the ball. It must keep moving, if you follow the difference.
I'm with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And finally, the judgment of the shot is relative to the target, or to our intended target.
Intended target.
Most golfers don't, most tour players do not aim at their target.
What?
No, no. They don't even in putting. There's only 8% of all tour players ever tested that aimed exactly on a 20-foot putt, exactly where they were supposed to aim.
What? Keep going. What?
No, that's true. That's statistics. Most of them aim slightly of the roughly 90% plus that did not aim exactly where they were supposed to on a 20-foot putt. More than half, about 55% of those, aim slightly left. The other half, the other less than half, aim slightly right.
And we're talking about of the cup. Or of their target line?
Of the intended line. In other words, they had a straight-in putt, 20 feet, so I could say the middle of the cup, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they measured them with lasers attached to their putter face.
And this is so intentional?
They didn't know they were doing it.
Oh, okay.
They thought they were all aiming exactly where they wanted to.
But they weren't?
Yeah. No. And they weren't because they had developed a repetitive putting stroke that the putter face came into the ball slightly to the right or slightly to the left. Now, if their putter face came into the ball slightly to the right, those were the golfers that learned to aim slightly left. Didn't know they were doing it. Didn't know when they ran the tests on them. Did not know that. They aimed wrong because their repetitive motion, if you will, would be a slight push fade. Now, it didn't show up the push fade to the putter, but they kept missing to the right, and pretty soon they were aiming more left. Didn't know it, I promise you. What's the same thing hitting a golf ball? The only person that should aim exactly at their target is the person who can hit the ball and it finishes up exactly at their target. Most people don't. The ball finishes up either slightly right or slightly left. And so what they do, Fred Couples aims maybe 40 yards left of his target. Lee Trevino aimed farther left. Jack Nicklaus aimed about 25 yards left of his target.
Mm-hmm.
Gary Player aimed slightly right of his target. Ben Hogan aimed slightly right of his target. Sam Snead aimed way right of his target.
Hmm.
The easiest way to get somebody who is swinging out to in to start aiming at start swinging more in to out, if you will, is to wildly change his aim. Wildly change it, you see.
Oh, man. Wow.
Yeah. It was a startling fact.
Yeah.
Let me go grab the book while we're talking here.
Sure.
Two guys, Howard Twitty and a very interesting man, an orthopedic surgeon, who's a golf fanatic, if you will, not a golf fanatic, but he loves golf, wrote an incredible book on putting. And they used so much of the statistics that were gathered by SAM Putting Lab, Science and Motion, which had studied the strokes of pretty much every single great player on any of the tours. I'm sorry, I don't have the book right now in front of me.
You said Howard Twitty?
Howard Twitty. It's a research book. It's self-published in a research book. But they went out and did this study, and all of a sudden they found out that such few percent of the, it's called There's More to Putting Than Meets the Eye, and Lanny L. Johnson, M.D., was the one that wrote it with Howard Twitty. And I have the collector's edition.
And again, what's the name of it?
There's More to Putting Than Meets the Eye.
Okay.
And they talked about how few people, certainly less than 10%, aimed exactly correct on a 20-foot putt. Yeah,
I'm looking up the book and see if we can where we can get it.
I think it's self published, and you have to contact probably Howard Twitty.
Well, it's there is a website. It's called prescriptiongolf.com. There is more to putting than meets the eye. And it's Howard Twitty, PGA Tour player, and Lanny Johnson, MD, research and development. And they've got a video that just starts right off. But there, you can just buy it from their website. 550-plus pages, full color, highest quality paper.
Yeah, it's an amazing book. It has everything you want to know and a whole lot of what you don't want to know about putting it. When I say that, I don't mean that you don't want to know. It's an exhaustive study.
Yeah. They said they'll offer this book at the cost of introductory price of $50.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Anyway, it's prescriptiongolf.com. Go check it out if you're fascinated by that.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh man. Jim, I've kept you on for quite a while only because I know what a momentous occasion it is for us on the Golf Smarter podcast to have someone of your stature, and I didn't want to let you go. I had too many questions after reading the book and enjoying the book greatly. And I got to tell you, in our hour and a half together, I've got about 17 epiphanies here. And I feel I honestly feel so much better about going out and just trusting what I have and not trying to change everything, correct everything. And how many times have I played with guys go, oh, I know what I did wrong in that swing. Oh, I know what I did wrong with that swing. But look, right? I mean, shut up.
They don't, and none of those things are what happened.
Right. And now when I go and play with people, I'm really going to focus on what the ball flight is. And
sure.
Like, and it's like, oh, okay, wait, what are you complaining about? That's the way you hit the ball every single time.
That's right. And as long as it's a decent shot and it's solid and it's repetitive, play it. Aim it. Play it and enjoy your golf.
Mm-hmm. And if you want to lower your scores, work on your putting.
That's right.
In your short game. Which now the short game, the ball flight on your short game is that a different beast? We're talking about full swings, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
But the same thing is true for the short game. You have to land your club with equilibrium. And if you're not landing it with equilibrium, it's either your golf swing has gotten what I call too narrow and too steep, or your golf swing is too wide and sweepy and too shallow.
Mm-hmm.
And all you've got to do, guess what? You got a 50-50 chance of being right. just take one of them. And if all of a sudden it's a disaster, you know you picked the wrong one. In other words, if your mistake got worse, if you take somebody who's chopping at the ball too much, just tell them, would you please swing up on one? And if they say, how do I do that? You know what I often say? Gee, I have no idea.
Well, yeah,
just be an athlete. Of course I have an idea, but I don't want to tell them. You see, just be an athlete. Don't chop down on the thing so much. Imagine not chopping down so much.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Mm-hmm. Because if I have a class of 5-year-old children, and I tell one of them, would you turn more in your backswing? I have yet to have any of them ask me how. Hmm. They should turn more, you see. So much of golf, we don't have to worry about the how. Just do the opposite of what is occurring.
The book is called Solid Contact, written by Jim Hardy. A legend in the game, a legend in teaching, clearly. The father of the one-plane, two-plane discussion.
Yes, right.
Jim, I really appreciate you spending so much time with us here on the Golf Smarter podcast. It's been a sheer joy and education, and boy, am I hungry.
Good.
Let's go out and have a salad.
All right. Thanks, Fran.
Coming up next, we're going to have two consecutive episodes with Dr. Joseph Parent to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the release of Zen Golf. I was very honored that he called and said he wanted to be on Golf Smarter to help celebrate. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, you know I want to hear from you. All you have to do is click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.